Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome back, everyone, to another week of the Damage Report. I'm Johnny Rolla. Brooke Thomas is here because it's Monday.
Exactly. It's Monday. It's fun day, Emma. Spending our break time educating John on some weird necessities.
We're talking about some news, and we will be talking about some news for the next hour. Lots to talk about. We're going to be doing an update on the ongoing problem with the fires all over California. Apparently, they're just going to burn forever. I guess we got to get used to that.
Got to raise
the We're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about how to fix it. There are some ideas coming from Finland. We're going to do updates on a couple of different stories. So Donald Trump had this interview sort of over the weekend, and they talked about Jamal Khashoggi and the updated information about his murder. We've got some updates on the acting AG, what we can expect out of him. And then I guess it was just a week ago that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez took part in the Sunrise Movement Green New Deal protest. Things are moving fast since then. We're gonna give you that update as well. And a little bit later on, we're gonna be joined by Michael Dougherty, who's gonna be talking to us about the new upcoming trend, at least in the UK, of companies microchipping their employees, which I've always said is a responsible thing to do in case you lose your employee.
Oh my gosh,
you call up, you can find him.
So weird.
I guess. But we're gonna talk about that, whether that's something that could be potentially coming to the US as well. And then just a little update on how this week is gonna play out. I'm actually going to be leaving the area today. Brett Ehrlich is going to be hosting tomorrow and the next day. So we do have a couple more shows for you before the Thanksgiving break. I'm going to be leaving though. And so we're going to close out the show talking a little bit about what we are thankful for.
Okay.
It's
lots
a little bit
to be
early.
Thankful about.
There is. I'm going to try to come up with some stuff. And with that, why don't we turn to some serious news? California fires continue. They are partially contained in some areas, and but still a gigantic problem. And as the cleanup crews and rescue crews are able to go into more areas, they are continuing to find human remains. And so we wanted to give you an update on the toll of these fires, in particular the Camp Fire. That death toll is now up to 77. So, I mean, I remember us talking about this not that long ago when it had already made history and it was close to half that. And you're also seeing there nearly 1,000 people are currently unaccounted for. That is a complicated number. When you see it, your initial reaction is, dear God, that's a lot of people, which is certainly true. And it is possible at this point that in the end, although it might take weeks or months, that the vast majority of those people could end up having actually died. But we don't know for now. The reason we aren't sure is many of the people whose names are on that list might have not had cell phones when they had to flee the fires. They might not have never owned cell phones to begin with. There are worries about duplicate names on the lists, people who might have been found, but their names haven't been taken off. And although that number continues to rise, that doesn't mean that it's only going up. As people are found, they are taking their names off the list, but it is a complex process. You know, it is amidst a tragedy, after all. But when you see that number, that is really scary. The prospect that 77 might just be the tip of the iceberg.
It should scare people. It's horrifying, you know?
Yeah. And additionally, in just 11 days, the fire has destroyed more than 10,000 homes north of Sacramento, including the entirety of towns like Paradise. I was listening to, I think it was an NPR, they were talking with some of the people who were lucky enough that their homes had not been destroyed. There was one woman who, I believe it might have been in Paradise. The entire neighborhood is gone. Her house is left standing, virtually undamaged. And so they were talking about when it'll be safe for her to go back. And for her and many other people in these areas, it's like, well, I guess I could go back, but what am I going back to? There's no neighborhood. There's no stores. There's no anything nearby. It's just my house in a sea of ash. Ugh. So technically, you still have your land. Technically, you still have your home. But what sort of place is that to bring your kids back to? Or, you know, how do you actually rebuild when an entire town is gone? Will it actually rebuild?
Yeah.
Especially if the fear now is that that might not be the only fire, that maybe in a few years it'll come back.
It's terrifying.
It's very scary. And the worst devastation is in that immediate area, both around the campfire, and then there was a fire closer to us in Malibu and those sorts of areas. But in addition, smoke has been a big problem. Mm-hmm. So if we can bring this up, you're going to see a semi-updated smoke map showing how bad it is in some areas. There have been reports that at least some of the smoke has reached the east coast of the United States. It has spread all over and is causing health problems, you know, in the immediate area, especially around the bay. You see San Francisco is right in the middle of that red there. It's really bad. And I've read reports saying that it's now worse than Beijing. My reaction to that is, dear God, it took fires of this magnitude to eclipse Beijing. How bad are things there? Mm-hmm. Which is something that we've talked about before, we'll return to. But even in LA, like we are experiencing issues related to this. I know that my girlfriend is having health problems from the constant smoke inhalation as well. And so you go around LA even, where we were untouched by the fires, and you see people in the masks and things like that.
Oh my God. Yeah. Just seeing the pictures of people like in the Bay Area, the differences between what it normally looks like and what it looks like now. Mm-hmm. This is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and the scariest thing is, you know, as we're, I guess not, look, again, the fires are still going on. We're not past this. It may feel like we've gotten past the worst of it, but the fires are still ongoing. Is that there is no reason to believe that it won't get worse.
Right. And just when you talk, and I know we'll get into it later, but like just talking about fixes, like the idea that the at best what you could do won't be done federally is upsetting.
Especially if the federal government doesn't want to do anything,
right.
If they don't actually care. And I saw a chart, you know, about a week ago, and I want to bring it back now. If you can bring this up, this is from Media Matters, broadcast news coverage of California's wildfires and climate change. And you're seeing there the number of segments they had done. That number is much higher now because that's only up to November 13th. But they had each done almost no segments that even mentioned climate change. And the bar for it to be counted was very minor. So how can you do dozens of segments without talking about what is obviously a contributing, if not causal, factor? And so people aren't being educated even during like the best opportunity for people to get how significant this is. And they think, you know, I mean, we're going to turn to Donald Trump and his raking comments in just a minute, but what do they think the solution is? If they're not being educated by the media about the things that are actually causing these fires to be more common and worse when they happen, what will they think the solution is? Bigger planes with more water to dump?
Right. You know, this like started something, a conversation online on social media that I had never even thought about before, even as a journalist. And I feel kind of like dumb almost about that, but about East Coast bias when it comes to news reporting. And I, you know, I'm like doing a little research, digging deeper, kind of like thinking like, well, but I think, you know, a lot of people criticizing this were right, that if there was an ongoing issue on the East Coast where more than 1,000 people were not accounted for, that it would be wall-to-wall coverage.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably true.
Yeah, I mean, that's
and it's something
that's
I hadn't even thought about, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, obviously, you know, when you have hurricanes and things like that, we do talk about it a lot. I don't know about any disasters other than maybe Katrina probably had a lot of missing people and difficulty knowing where people had gone. But yeah, it's a significant chunk of a 9/11 of people that are currently missing. And I mean, certainly it has been talked about, as you saw there.
For sure.
There were a lot of segments, but probably not the same as if it was in Virginia or something like that. I think I still actually have a little bit of that bias as well.
You think so?
Sometimes when I go to talk about a story that is sort of particular to California, I wonder if I should.
If this was going on in New York, do you think that news coverage, it'd be
devastating.
Okay.
Well, don't worry, New York's got some devastating news of its own coming up in a couple of decades, since for the same reason, we choose not to do anything. So let's turn to what we can potentially do. Donald Trump actually visited California to talk with those fighting the fire and with the governor, and he had some advice about what we can do to avoid these sorts of fires in the future. He said this, I was with the president of Finland and he said we have much different, we're a forest nation. He called it a forest nation. And they spend a lot of time on raking and cleaning and doing things and they don't have any problem. And what it is, it's a very small problem. So I know everybody's looking at that to that end. So they're raking and cleaning the forests of Finland, a country that is 70% covered with forests. So it takes a long time to rake all of that. Now it might seem like we're sort of taking him, like we're focusing too much on one word, but no, this is actually something that he has returned to a couple of times over the past few weeks. He had previously said in an interview, I was watching the firemen the other day and they were raking areas. They were raking areas where the fire was right over there. And they're raking little bushes that you could see are totally dry weeds. And they're raking them, they're on fire. That should have been all raked out and cleaned out. You wouldn't have the fire. So a couple times he's mentioned now that he either thinks they should be raking or they already raking the fire.
Are, because you know, you are for sure like the environmental expert here, but Are leaves in a forest a hazardous?
Well, look, so I'm gonna give him as the biggest benefit of the doubt possible. Okay. So underbrush can contribute to the severity of fires and how fast they spread. And so there are programs, like even in California, where they do controlled burns, where they purposefully set small fires to clean out the area under conditions where they can destroy it if they want to. Mm-hmm. So that is a thing. But what is not a thing is going through the entirety of hundreds or thousands of square miles of forest and raking out all of the leaves.
As if it were like your front yard.
Yeah, it's yeah, exactly.
Keep it pretty.
And right. the Finnish president didn't actually tell him that. And so we now turn to the Finnish president, who said he told Trump that Finland is a country covered by forests, but we also have a good surveillance system and network in case of wildfires. However, raking wasn't brought up in the conversation. The Finnish president reckons raking perhaps came to Trump's mind after seeing the firefighters raking the burned down areas in California. So he just confuses all these things. They get mixed up in his head, and he might end up spending billions to rake California's wildfires as a result of this.
What's frustrating about this, just I think a lot of people, two things. One, the answers that the president was giving kind of during this little miniature kind of press conference. Mm-hmm. Seemed uneducated. And then the big takeaway from this is that once again, the president lied. And yeah. A foreign leader has to come out and say, that didn't happen. I did not say that.
Yeah.
That happens so often.
Because of his ignorance and his lack of curiosity, lack of interest in finding out what's going on.
Is that the reason one lies?
I think that's part of it. Okay. He doesn't know. Well, he might still lie even if he did know, but he doesn't know. He doesn't know anything about the climate, he doesn't know anything about fire. But thankfully, there was the Finnish president. There are also regular Finnish people, including Tarja, who tweeted this. Just this afternoon, I was busy meeting my raking quota. Hashtag rake news, hashtag Finland. So look, that's a fire hazard waiting to happen. Yeah. You better get going, clear that out. And let's see, Mira tweeted, off to perform my civic duty, hashtag rake news, hashtag Finland. And she's got, I hope she gets out there, because if this were to happen to Finland, that would be very scary. So no, that's not actually what's causing our fire. Climate change is causing our fires. Now there have always been and will always be wildfires in California, but they are far more common and far worse because we have dried out our state.
Right.
And so when there is a problem, when there is someone leaves a little fire, or there are some concerns about the possibility that a power plant might have caused this, that might not have been a gigantic problem, 50 years ago, if we had not done what we have done to our climate.
What's upsetting, I think another aspect of this that's upsetting, then, is this is something that is very serious right now. It's dangerous. It's devastating and life-changing for so many people right now. Mm-hmm. And it is almost like a punchline a little bit. And that starts with the president of the United States, because he said something that not only wasn't true, but was just so ridiculous and easily like disprovable. It's frustrating, and you feel bad for the people who are watching, their country's leader and how he's discussing their devastation, and that misses the mark.
Yeah.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
At the very least.
Yeah, but by the way, as ridiculous as it is also, let's acknowledge, blaming the victims.
Right.
That is his thing that he does. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, Jamal Khashoggi, the CIA has weighed in. They apparently believe they know who actually ordered this. We'll brief you on that after this. Welcome back to The Damage Report, everybody. Brooke is here.
Yeah, hi.
More serious news for you. Let's jump into Trump's interview. It has been well over a month at this point since Washington Post journalist and US resident Jamal Khashoggi was killed at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. We have gotten nothing approaching justice. We have barely gotten any answers. But it turns out that the CIA has been doing their own analysis, gathering information and communications, and they now know who they believe was responsible for this killing. It's a shocker. It's the guy that we thought it was, the leader of Saudi Arabia. The Central Intelligence Agency has concluded that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman ordered the killing of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi, according to American officials. We don't have an official report or anything like that yet, but we do have an idea of what led them to this conclusion. The CIA has buttressed its conclusion with two sets of crucial communications, intercepts of the Crown Prince's calls in the days before the killing, and calls by the kill team to a senior aide to the Crown Prince. The evidence included an intercept showing a member of the kill team calling an aide to Prince Mohammed and saying, quote, tell your boss that the mission was accomplished. And they point out, the New York Times does, in their article about this, that that is not proof, which is true, but it seems, I mean, that's pretty strong. If you call his aide and then say, tell your boss, I mean, unless that's just the way they joke after killing someone, it does seem like, first of all, that does link it very, very tightly to the Crown Prince. But also, if this guy is a senior aide to the Crown Prince in a dictatorial regime,
right,
it seems unlikely that he would go around sparking an international incident without checking in with his boss.
That's right. That's the big part. That's the evidence. Just the even just basic knowledge that one could have about how this country operates. Mm-hmm. Everyone, it's just logical.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
This did not and could not possibly have happened without.
Yeah. Well, and especially when it appears to track with what we know the Crown Prince wanted. The Crown Prince was desperate to get him back to the country. Mm-hmm. Now, every once in a while, the story switches from it was an obviously planned kill to, well, you know, maybe they were just trying to get him back and then it got out of hand. There's always the problem of why do you have a bone saw? That's not just, it's not like a Swiss Army knife. Like some guys carry bone saws. That's not normal. But sometimes that's the excuse that is given. At this point, we have known since very early on basically everything that happened. Right. And the evidence has come out to support it, which is great. We want the evidence. But we have known for a long time. And we have also known that Donald Trump, either for personal financial reasons or for real politic reasons of the United States and their perception, is unlikely to actually do anything about this. And now, with more and more information coming out and the CIA's sort of like the basic idea of their conclusion having come out as well, more pressure on the president to actually do something. But if you're hoping that he will actually bow to that pressure and, you know, put something stronger than sanctions on low-level members of the Saudi regime, I've got an interview clip for you that should cause you to second guess that, as you'll see.
We have the tape. I don't want to hear the tape. No reason for me to hear the tape.
Why don't you, but why don't you want to hear it, sir?
Because it's a suffering tape. It's a terrible tape. I've been fully briefed on it. There's no reason for me to hear it. In fact, I said to the people, should I? They said, you really shouldn't. There's no reason. I know everything that went on the tape without having to.
And what happened?
It was very violent, very vicious, and terrible.
Okay, so look, there's 10 things today that Trump does that would be, you know, the biggest news for a president for a full year. So this is just one of them, but he's got the evidence now. We know, he says he has it and he won't listen to it because it's a suffering tape.
Right, like this is the commander in chief. So you send thousands of troops out and they put their lives on the line and mm-hmm. you, their boss, are too sensitive. Mm-hmm. You can't even listen to a tape. Like this is gross. Come on, it's disrespectful to this man's family, to his legacy, to the. You also can't be, you know, somewhat. You're the spokesperson for our country. Mm-hmm. Really, you can't refuse to have every bit of information possible. That doesn't make any sense. It's not okay. Yeah. He should be embarrassed to even, you know, say that I don't want to listen. Oh, it's too much. They said I shouldn't listen. I don't have to. Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to turn to that in a second. But We're not asking him to go through thousands of pages of documents and correspondence. It's a couple minutes of tape. They killed him relatively quickly. You can listen to it. Maybe there's evidence there. Maybe you actually hearing the dying screams of this US resident might cause you to change your approach a little bit.
Hello.
And maybe that's why he won't listen to it. Maybe there is a little bit of empathy deep inside and he knows when to hide from it. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility. But also, and again, I occasionally do this just in case there are Trump supporters that are watching this, to try to appeal to you. When he says, I don't need to listen to it, there's no reason to listen to it. And then that clearly Chris Wallace doesn't accept that because that's ridiculous. So then it immediately becomes, oh, and then I asked the people and the people said there's no reason for you to listen to it. Who are the people?
You're right. Was it a CIA officer? The people, you're right. I missed that. Yeah.
There are people. And he asked the CIA officer, and the CIA officer was like, don't worry about it, boss. No reason for you to listen to that.
It's going
to
be too hard for you.
That did not actually happen. That conversation didn't happen. Every time he is questioned, it becomes, there's people agreeing with me. People are saying it. We're going to have it when we talk about Whitaker a little bit later. People are saying he's respected. He can never say who, he can never say when, he can never say where. It's always just, there's things that make me right that I'm not even aware of and I refuse to make you aware of.
Right.
The important thing, though, is that we know what is going on here. The Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia believes that he could go around the world and he can murder people if he wants to, even if they're members of the media, even if they're US residents. And when I say that he believes he can do it, he's right to think that because there will be no consequences. We will do nothing. Donald Trump in a later portion of the interview says, he tells me he didn't do it. And Chris Wallace, to his limited credit, keeps pushing back. What if he's lying, ding dong? What if he, of course, a person who murders someone is probably not gonna say, you got me. Yeah, we really botched that one. We shouldn't have had the bone saw, I guess. Yes, he's a liar. He's a dictator. You can't trust what he says. And Donald Trump eventually just said, he keeps saying, yeah, he tells me he didn't do it. The same as with Putin. He looked into my eyes. He says that he didn't do it. And then he finally says the truest part. We have an alliance. I want to sell weapons. That's the reason we're not getting any justice.
Right, but you don't even, all of those reasons why this, you should not believe what is being said, you don't even need all of that. You really just can start with this incident. Mm-hmm. And there's so many facts laid out that this is like, okay, maybe I shouldn't believe this person. Because now it's like, you know, he told me he didn't do it. Right, but at the beginning of this, he told you it didn't happen for days. He said it didn't even happen. Mm-hmm. And so turns out that wasn't true and wasn't even likely that he could have believed that at the time. And so now we've switched the story and you believe this story now? That doesn't even make any sense. You've gotten three different stories and you are refusing to question any of them at any different points in this.
Yeah.
And it's worrisome.
Yeah. It's obvious what we need to do.
He said it didn't happen. For a long time.
Exactly.
And
if we, I know that people love to call it either both siders. It's the same. Every president would be the same. It doesn't actually matter. Would any president, would any other Republican president have had this play out the way that it has? No, only Donald Trump would have actually said this stuff, continued this charade of, yeah, I want the report. I'm really interested. I mean, I'm not going to listen to it or anything because it's a suffering tape. No, you know what? That interview is a suffering tape. I apologize for forcing you to listen to it there in the audience. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. We come back a little bit more from Donald Trump, this time on his new acting AG and how much leeway he'll give him when it comes to Robert Mueller. Welcome back to The Damage Report. I am John Erlenbrook is here as well. A little bit more to get to. As I said earlier in the show, though, we do have an interview in the upcoming block. We're going to be joined by Michael Dougherty. He's going to be joining us to talk about microchipping of employees. So if you value your purely biological lifestyle, unsullied by computer technology, you might want to watch this and see where we might be going as a society. I joke. I actually think there's some interesting potential implications about the ability to put things in our, I'm not going to say bodies because that sounds weird.
But that's what it is.
Yeah. Look, it's one thing if it's a corporation, it's another if it's individuals. Maybe we'll get into that in the interview. But there might be things that you could personally benefit.
We're not puppies.
We do carry our cell phones everywhere.
Okay, that's.
So it's not in our body, but it's in our pants, I guess. It's close.
But that's an.
Anyway,
okay,
we'll turn into it. Don't worry. Lots to get to before that.
Okay.
I'm gonna swear on this, just like I did Anna on self-driving cars last week. Okay, let's move on. Matthew Whitaker is the acting AG. Depending on who you talk to and when you talk to them, he is either only holding that position for like a week until they can get a permanent one, or he's being talked about as if he's gonna be there forever. And whether he is or not, there's huge implications for his approach to the Robert Mueller special counsel's investigation. We know what he thinks about that investigation. He had been very outspoken for over a year now, going on cable news and saying that it was a witch hunt, that it was invalid, should have never been started. It was very clear that that's what he thought. And in terms of his profile at the national level, if you were a person, what would you know about him? That is virtually the only thing there is to know about him.
Right.
He goes on cable news, he attacks the Mueller investigation. Now he's the acting AG. Donald Trump wants to pretend that he didn't know that. But in terms of how hands-on he'll be if Whitaker does step in and do something in regard to the special counsel's investigation, here's Donald Trump talking with Chris Walls.
Whitaker decides in any way to limit or curtail the Mueller investigation. Are you okay with that?
Look, it's going to be up to him. I think he's very well aware politically. I think he's astute politically. He's a very smart person, a very respected person. He's going to do what's right. I really believe he's going to do what's right.
But you won't overrule him if he decides to curtail.
I would not get involved. And all these people that say, I'm going to end the investigation, you know, they've been saying that now for, how long has this witch hunt gone on? It's gone on for what?
Since May of 17.
Okay, but how long have I been looked at? You know when I've been looked at?
Since from the July day of 2016.
From the day I announced, I was looked at as a candidate with nothing, no proof, with phony people like McCabe and Strzok and his lover. You had Lisa Page, his lover. These people were looking at me. They wanted an insurance policy just in case I won or Hillary lost. And this was the insurance policy. It's a scam. There was no collusion whatsoever. And the whole thing is a scam.
Okay, so whole thing's a scam. We're very clear on that. He said that 100 times. So there, like, if you're wondering what will, if Whitaker steps in, if he either ends the Mueller investigation, if he tries to block him from doing various things, if Whitaker wants to block the report from coming out, will Donald Trump step in? No, he's being hands off. So that is out there. You can now rely on that.
Yeah, but there's some, you know, I guess remote even dishonesty in the lack of accountability, like the fact that appointing him is by just definition getting involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this person who has been very clearly against this entire investigation and very verbal about that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take that person and knowing what we all know, what he has said, what he's gone on, you know, he's been on network saying this,
mm-hmm.
and then you appoint him in, yes, that's just by definition getting involved. You can't then step away and say, well, I'm not going to get involved. Now that I've put him
Well, I just
there.
Wanted people to understand that by not get involved, he means not protect it, not allow it to continue.
Yeah, right.
So he tries to make the point, you saw at the end of that clip, they've been saying, I'm gonna shut it down. Look how wrong they've been. As he says, yes, this guy I picked that we know that hates the investigation, if he decides to stop it, I'm not gonna stop him. So he proves the lie inside of that same clip. He chose Matthew Whitaker, a guy who has no qualification for being in that position whatsoever, but we know his stance on Robert Mueller. He chooses him knowing what approach that guy is gonna have and then says, well, I'm hands off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are people who have been trying to hoodwink you about this investigation since day one. They will probably continue to try to do that with Matt Whitaker. Matt Whitaker being brought in is an attack against the Mueller investigation. Whether he shuts it down on day one or slows it down on, you know, weeks like six or whatever, he is there to destroy it. Donald Trump is being very clear in this clip about that. And so I think that we should understand that, you know, we've come to accept a lot, I think.
Right.
He's not recusing, he's not gonna recuse. He's a ridiculous goofball guy. If you haven't already seen John Oliver's segment on him, this is a guy who was involved in this patent company.
Oh gosh,
that was—they were patenting time machines and genes to make your butt bigger. Like that's who this guy is. He is not some, like Donald Trump can say he's politically astute. He's a very intelligent, very respected person. If he's politically astute, I mean, I guess he knew to go on cable news and attack Robert Mueller. That shows an understanding of the ridiculous political landscape that we live in. To know that you can get a job based off of that, but his intelligence and his respectability. That has not been established. And thankfully, there are people trying to stop him. There's a couple of different legal challenges. The latest one is being offered by Senators Blumenthal and Hirono and Sheldon Whitehouse as well. Tracks with two other recent court actions arguing that Whitaker lacks Senate confirmation required of all cabinet officials. That is an argument that they're making. I don't know 100% if that's going to be able to stop Whitaker from functioning as the acting AG.
Right.
In response, Donald Trump has said, oh yeah, well, Robert Mueller wasn't Senate confirmed either. Well, special counsels aren't confirmed by the Senate. That's not how it actually works.
It would be cool if you knew how things worked, but.
Yeah. He has previously been confirmed by the Senate in his other position, so he has at least gone through that process. Whitaker has never gone through that process. So ridiculous there as well. There's one other aspect of this I do want to talk about. Donald Trump is apparently in the process of finishing up his written answers to Robert Mueller's questions. But what is he talking about? What is he not talking about? Will he actually get into the topic of obstruction of justice? Let's listen.
You are submitting written answers to the special counsel about the issue of collusion, but not on obstruction of justice.
Well, there was no obstruction of justice.
Let me, if I may, sir, just
I think they probably agree with that. And all you have to do is look at Article 2.
Is that your final position, that there's going to be no sit-down interview and nothing written or in person on obstruction?
I would say probably. Probably. I mean, I can change my mind, but probably. I think we've wasted enough time on this witch hunt. And the answer is probably. We're finished.
What are the odds? One in 100?
I don't do odds. I gave very detailed.
You ran casinos, sir.
You're right. And very successfully, actually.
Yeah, it went bankrupt. So I'm like, Chris Wallace was actually laughing at him there. So that was a little bit funny. His casinos actually failed. He just rewrites history. Like, yeah, it's very successful. Yeah. Yeah, and I was a star football player in high school. I mean, in reality, I was on the team for 2 weeks and I left. But it's nicer if I was the star. So if Chris Wallace ever talks to me, I'm just gonna say that I'm the star.
Right.
I think that even after a couple of years, we still think that we have to approach Donald Trump like he's technically an adult. He's a professional, I guess. But what he said in response to will you answer questions about obstruction of justice had no more intellectual or philosophical like value or weight than Timmy, did you steal a cookie? I'm not gonna answer that question because I didn't steal any cookies. That is all that Donald Trump is saying there. I don't have to answer questions from the special counsel because I didn't do it. And it's up to me to determine if we've been wasting too much time with this investigation.
Everything.
That's how the legal process works.
For him to determine everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And again, you know, we touch base on this story like once every 2 or 3 weeks. Is that the set of answers that a person would give if they were innocent?
For someone who has so much to say about respect and about just respecting the office of the president, just even that clip mm-hmm. is so not presidential or respectful or professional or anything.
Yeah, at least it wasn't about raking.
Honest, at least it wasn't about raking, you know?
Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, Michael Dougherty is gonna be joining us. We're talking about microchipping of employees, a topic that has already got Brooke fired up. We're gonna see what happens in this next block. We'll see you in just a few. I welcome the future. I like technology, but have we actually come to the point where we're gonna start putting microchips in our employees? Join the show now to help break this down. Michael Dougherty, CEO of the Cyber Education Foundation and founder of the Justice Society. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good to be here. How are you?
I'm good, but I'm also free of implants. Maybe I wouldn't be so good. But anyway, I wanna talk to you about this, something that you're very invested in. Apparently in the UK, this is like a trend that's in development. Can you update on us on that?
Yeah, and there's also a company in Sweden that is manufacturing this. And so, you know, it's a big news grabber, right? Because what the heck? Let's just take our iPhone and our GPS and just put it under our skin now. So it's crazy. And, you know, but there, what's crazier to me is there's some employees that are fine with this. They think it's great that I just get to punch in and I can wave my arm against the soda machine and get my Diet Coke and I can get my candy, you know, so the masses of people that don't understand their privacy risks are pretty large, because I guess they think that, well, I haven't broken a law, so what bad things can happen to me?
Well, there's a lot of things I want to ask you about this, but it's interesting, as you described that at the end, it made me think about how we have just become accustomed to having, you know, smartphones on us at all times, which, you know, it's got a lot of functionality, a lot of things we can do, but it also has microphones and cameras mm-hmm. and GPS and all of that. And we have we would never have, if the government came and said, we want you to carry around this device, we wouldn't have done it. But we've willingly carried these smartphones. Do you think that not just some UK employees, but are people going to be seduced into implanting themselves with things that make them easier to track and things like that?
I will be terrified if that really happens, if we have that many people that are that clueless. But it's a great conversation to have, because people have to understand that your smartphone, which, you know, if you go back to the 50s, you know, the size of that first IBM computer that had to get an extra wide, you know, plane to put it in, and your smartphone's more powerful than that. So we really don't have a frame of reference of the power that we're just carrying around in our pocket. And convenience is the number one motivator for human behavior and marketing, right? So, and how convenient is all this? And that's the first thing people say. But because we scroll down that tiny font and we click on that box and no one reads that stuff, we don't understand that, hey, that's where the free goes. The free goes into, I'm letting you track me, analyze me, monetize me, figure out what groups I hang with, how much I travel. You put all that together with artificial intelligence, and that could be turned off, or you, as we learn more about it, we can get upset with who's doing that. I don't think we understood that that was the deal when we signed up for it. But going for microchips under the skin for your employer, I just think it's a great story so we can talk about how much we really don't understand how the privacy's already out the door. We don't need to make it worse.
That's true. I did want to ask one follow-up though. I know you have a background in, you know, the area of health and things like that. When it comes, is that an area where we might see more, I guess, people's willingness to implant things if they think that there's some sort of, it can track, you know, things in your blood, or you know, track for cancer? Like, that seems to me like something that would be very persuasive to people. I wonder if that's an area that will be exploited in the near future.
Well, that would be, and that's going to come with implantable devices, and that's going to be something you're more aware of or more in front of your face to decide on as you get older. But you see, with technology, we are moving so far ahead of the curve. You solve one problem and you make it sound really good, but then you've got a bunch of other problems. Like, what's the same things with cars? What happens if someone hacks it and tries to kill you, or speed it up, or change the data, or find out? So, or take your health data. You know, it's the same. But it's all about privacy and security, and who's making sure that the safeguards are in place, because the government has proven to be absolutely, utterly terrible at that.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't have the people with technological knowledge taking the government salaries. You know, we have politicians that are looking at Zuckerberg during a hearing, and we are terrified that we don't think that Orrin Hatch even knows how to reboot his computer. So, you know, it's who's going to keep us safe? I don't think so. And that's the problem.
Yeah. From time to time, it seems like we do have at least a limited national conversation. We had about Facebook a little bit earlier this year about, you know, fake news a year or two ago. There was concern about the NSA, you know, back about 5 years ago. The public occasionally checks in on this topic. Over the past 5-10 years, in terms of privacy and security of our data, do you feel like things have been getting better or worse?
They've been getting worse. And this is the thing, every year from the year 2000 to 2018, and the trend is not going to stop, we've lost more data than the year prior. And that's because the weapons get more sophisticated. As we close one door, you know, they crack another one open. Combined with the fact that there's no real international agreement on what to do with jurisdiction or accountability. So they can be in a rogue nation, and they can almost, you could kind of watch them through a clear plate glass just ripping you off, and there's nothing you can do. And they'll just stick their tongue out. You can call the police, you can be outraged, and they'll be like, sorry, you know, when the FBI calls, you know, Moscow or China, they don't like pick up and jump to attention. And a lot, and in those countries, the government is mixed with these people. Yeah. It's not like here. That is the biggest challenge, is forget the technological issues that we're behind, but the bad guys are outside of our reach.
So we're talking a lot about, also, hi, good morning. We're talking a lot about why this is a bad idea, but how likely do you believe this is actually potentially, I guess, a part of our future?
Well, I think John brought up a great point about healthcare. I think in that instance, the future is already here and getting closer. And so, you know, and this is the thing, data is data, and anything that has value is going to have value to a criminal where he can make money off it. So if it's going to be health data or social security numbers or policy numbers, that's going to be one issue. The other is going to be just terroristic type stuff of trying to harm people. So those don't change regardless of where we're at. It's just the stakes get higher when they can actually go inside your body instead of inside your purse or backpack or pocket, you know? And so this is why you want to walk a line and not be too, you know, conspiracy-like. But look, a lot of this stuff is true, and the bad people are to be afraid of. And it only takes one idiot, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, everything could be perfect, but one fool does something with the data, wherever the data is stored, or how to get into your data, and there you go. So it's a tough nut to crack. I just want us to have caution and really understand what we're dealing with. Nothing's perfect, but it's not, you know, bad things can happen. And I think we get a little punch drunk with, oh, this is so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm terrified, so I think you've done your job.
I want to be healthily fearful, yeah.
Healthfully fearful. Okay, that's going to be the tagline of our show, actually, going forward. Michael Dougherty, CEO of the Cyber Education Foundation, thank you for joining us.
Good talking to you guys. Thanks.
Thanks. We're gonna take a short break. When we come back, this is Thanksgiving week, my last show of the week. What are we thankful for after this? Welcome back, everyone. Just minutes remaining in this episode of The Damage Report. And it's Thanksgiving week, and I'm actually off after tonight. So the first thing I'm thankful for this year is that I'm not gonna be here the rest of the week, but the show will go on. We're gonna have episodes tomorrow and the next day in advance of Thanksgiving. I tried to force them to come in on Thanksgiving, but it turns out I can't legally do that. But Brooke is here, and so I thought we'd take a couple of minutes to talk about what we are thankful for in 2018.
What are you thankful for besides vacation
you
week?
First.
No, it's so many things. Listen, I'm thankful for living here in California, which is one of the emotionally safest places in this country right
emotionally,
now.
Emotionally, yes.
Yes, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it's a bit hot. But this place is on fire.
Could be worse.
You know?
Well, right. Too soon. Yeah.
It is.
But
it's devastating.
This, even, you know, this opportunity here, because LA is a rough place, you know, and I moved here from Philly, and this has probably been the kindest, most fun newsroom that I've ever encountered. You know, I've worked in 1,000
You have worked all
newsrooms.
Over.
Yes. So it is just, there are so many likable people here.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's one guy, Brett, and it's like, we could do without him, but.
Yeah, we're working on that.
Everyone, Brett is like my favorite person. No, it's just, it's a fun place. So I'm thankful for you guys.
Well, we're thankful for you.
I'm thankful for my family, you know?
Yeah, I guess technically.
They're,
okay, your family, okay. That's great. I'm thankful for my family. I don't get to see my family a lot. Wait. Oh my God, jeez. Ever since they got this ability to type those up in real time, Jesus. But yes, I'm thankful for my family. I don't get to see them very often, but for Christmas, actually, I'm gonna see both of my brothers at the same time, something that only happens on average once every 5 years.
Yeah.
So that should be cool. What else?
That's about it, no? You know, I actually live with my cousin out here. Super thankful for him. My uncle's in town, his father, who is like a dad to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm really incredibly thankful for my family. Everyone's healthy, everyone's doing well, everyone's happy. You know, I'm thankful for my friends. I've got some really good friends. I think just people, that's really where my thankfulness lies. I mean, you've had a big, you've got your own show.
Yeah, I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for my girlfriend and my dog, which sort of keep me sane. God only knows what my life would be like if I didn't have any of those. I'd just be floating through the universe, basically, untethered to reality. So I'm thankful for that. I'm also thankful for, not to get like stupid and like put for a ton of, I am thankful that I'm gonna have a ton of bro time this week. No, I'm thankful for a lot of the incoming Congress people, especially the Congresswomen.
You're thankful
that are
for the new, more. Like the possibility of a house doing something?
Exactly. So I'm just going to say, if you're on the podcast, none of this is going to make any sense.
You don't get the giggles.
But they're typing stuff all over the bottom of the screen.
Right.
So no, I'm especially thankful for some of the politicians that are helping to drive a lot of news coverage of issues that we've wanted to see talk about for a long time. So Rashida Tlaib and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez with their talk about the Green New Deal and all. Like, it's just so great. And Ro Khanna on the economic issues. Like, We've only the only names for the past 2 years have been negative ones. Donald Trump and his, you know, his orbit of terrible people. It's good to have good people that you can, you know, be inspired by.
Yeah.
I also want to thank those people who make this show possible. People like you and JR and the other co-hosts, our guests as well. Edwin, who you can't see, Sophie, who's over here. The control room is awesome too. Brett's technically in there as well. Dan, who betrayed us and moved on to another show, but he was good while he lasted.
Yeah,
but and I am so, Dan Jenna and Amber,
so lovable. Craig's food.
All the other crew people. Bart's in there too, and our editors as well. Cassie, all the people who help publish the podcast. Like, there's so many people that you don't even know about that are required for this show to work. But we're thankful for them too.
Oh my gosh, your viewers.
Oh no, we have no time.
We have no
the
time.
Viewers as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for watching. We'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.